Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have the Raven Scratch-Offs to give away a full slate ahead into November, December. I got dates at Coco's. We're going to be at Gertrude's at the BMA on December 5th with Dan Rodericks for the holidays. I just got word that Gina Shock's going to be joining us, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, on December the 19th at Costas. We're going to be doing it in the bar. So I have holiday things and then November things, all of it brought to you by friends at Jiffy Lube Multi Care as well. Luke and I are going to get together now, talk about the injuries of Lamar Jackson and the Broncos coming to town. We've done a lot with the Broncos this week. You can find it all out at Baltimore Positive. Sean Drotar from Mile High Sports, Mike Kliss from TV there in Denver, written books on John Elway, as well as Brandon Stokely, who caught a few passes around here of significance as well. I buy things on the internet, Luke. You know this, right? And I've been a little wistful. I don't spend money on sports anymore. I almost went to Game 5 of the World Series on Wednesday, and I didn't. I'm still waiting to hear from Miss Griggs to see if my application for my Birdland membership has been approved or not, so I can start spending money with them again. But I bought this incredible piece of work on the internet. It came in a box, and it came like literally in a box at like 6 o'clock on Wednesday night. And no sooner did I open this than the Yankees had blown the World Series at home at Yankee Stadium, and I thought, a day where a Stedman book would show up that I never knew existed. These are his columns from the 60s and 70s, and the missing columns of the characters of John Stedman, Mr. Diz, and all of these people, all of them are in here. So if I'm busy this weekend before the Broncos game, it's the best and worst of Stedman. And by the way, I just opened the book here, Luke. John F. Stedman has been sports editor since January 6, 1958. He even remembers the date like a birthday because it was one of the most significant dates of his life. I began working at the Baltimore Sun on January the 6th, 1986. So there. So the first thing in the book, I'm already interested in it. And he's already complaining on page 54 about how these bum athletes make too much money and money's overtaking the game and it's going to wreck the sports and it's not fun anymore because of money. That was in 1974. I think he was writing about Johnny Unitas.
There you go. I mean, look, all those, you can go back and find stuff from the early 1900s talking about baseball and salaries growing out of control, considering what they were making then compared to today. But always fun to look back at that, and certainly all the respect in the world for John Stedman, that's for sure.
All right, you've had work to do all week. This is your chance to plug the tech service because it has been active. I don't know at what point the Lamar thing becomes alarming, probably sometime in the next 48 hours if it's to become alarming. Weird week, dude. Marcus Williams, no speaky, trade for wide receiver. We did an hour on that. Denver's in town. They're 5-3. They're better than you think. Probably on both sides of the ball, even the skill position players, they could have used Deontay Johnson.
Yeah.
For where this game is and this piece of coming out of this game, wherever they are health-wise, and then having to play football again. Next Thursday's Thanksgiving around here. We just get the Bengals coming to town, and they're going to have to chase Ja'Marr Chase around. And, all things considered, and as the Browns proved last week, and Jim Schwartz, and we did a long segment on that, when you prepare for Lamar, you're a little more prepared. Even if you don't have the personnel, you at least have watched enough film and have some tendencies and have some schooling that these NFC teams seem to get on Wednesday afternoon, and by Sunday they're overwhelmed. This next couple of this is treacherous at 5-3. They haven't given themselves a lot of wiggle room here.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also what happens when you start 0-2, right? I mean, that's just where you are. And interestingly enough, I mean, this is a Denver team that also started 0-2, a team that obviously has a rookie quarterback, and as you pointed out, doesn't have a lot of star power, right? There aren't a lot of big names on this team necessarily, although certainly they have their share of really talented players when you talk about Surtain and some of the others. But this is a team that's playing good football, and they haven't had the toughest slate of opponents. I do want to start off by saying that. So it's not as though you look at their wins and the profile of the teams that they've played and you're wowed. I mean, they went on the road and they beat the Buccaneers 26-7 back in week 3, which was very much a surprising outcome at that point in time. But they've won 5 of their last 6, and They've got a really good defense. And as I just pointed out, you may not recognize that many names on that defense other than Sertan and a couple others, but they've got good players. And like I said, it's not necessarily superstar household names, but go look at how their defense has played. I mean, this has played like, just about any metric you want to look to. It's played at a top five or at least top 10 level, really, across the board. I mean, you just look at their very simple rankings. They're third in total defense, seventh in rush defense, fourth in pass defense, third in points per games allowed, 16th in third down defense. Okay, there's your one metric that doesn't look quite as impressive. Third in the red zone. So you're talking about a very sound defense and a defense that has the ability to get after the quarterback. Oh, that sounds familiar. That's what Cleveland can do and what Cleveland did against the Ravens last Sunday. And their offense, which obviously lags behind the defense, but they've got a pretty darn good offensive line, which means they've been giving Bo Nix time, which we know the Ravens have had their issues getting pressure on quarterbacks consistently. So there you go. There's a formula there that, okay, even though the only name that you really recognize from their pass catcher collection is Courtland Sutton, they can still make plays if you give Bo Nix time in the pocket. And we know that that's been an issue, and that was certainly a major issue against Jameis Winston and the Browns. So this is not a game that the Ravens can take lightly. I mean, I know what Vegas says, and you can look at the point spread. And I was talking about that with a few other reporters during Wednesday's practice, kind of
Feels
saying, wow,
ambitious.
that's,
9.5 feels really
yeah,
ambitious. I feel like 6 would be right there. You know what I mean? Like I 6, maybe 7. 9.5, like that's a big number considering the Ravens' defensive issues and how Denver's played, which is better than expected. And
Let's be
decent on the
clear.
road. And decent on the
Yeah.
road.
Yeah, and let's be clear. I expect the Ravens to win this football game. I'm not going to sit here and try to sit here and create a doomsday scenario that I'm expecting. That said, if you lose to the Cleveland Browns on the heels of having lost to the Las Vegas Raiders back in week two, you can't sit here and say that any game's a layup or any game's a guarantee or anything like that. I mean, get out of here with that. So this is a team that's going to come in and absolutely has the potential to give the Ravens everything they can handle on Sunday. They like to run the ball. And while we know the Ravens defense has been very stout and elite against the run, Michael Pierce is on IR. Brent Urban's in concussion protocol. Travis Jones is still not right with that ankle. I mean, I said this to you before last week's game. I think it was crazy that they played him last Sunday. I mean, he only played 15 snaps as it was, and go back and look, he wasn't right. You got to get him right. He's been your best defensive lineman. So you look at how banged up they are up front defensively, and knowing that, yes, even though Javonte Williams isn't this running back that has a great yards per carry average, he's still very capable, and he's still someone that they'll want to feed if they get opportunities to do it. And the game script dictates that they can still do it. And Bo Nix can run around. He's not Lamar Jackson, but he can run around. You can't let him get out of the pocket.
Well, the
So
notion that they're a
this is.
run stuff team and that you can't run on them, teams are going to start to test that a little bit if they have the capability to do that.
Well, they will, but at the same time, and I kind of talked about this after the Cleveland game, you could throw all over the field on them. It's at some point in time, you can test it. I agree, but if your pass defense can't do anything to stop them, you get to a point where you say, "Well, why would I even bother to try to run against the Ravens? I'll just throw it all over the field." And teams have had success
Well, we got
doing that,
corners
even.
we got to get on the field, right? We have the
Yeah.
quarterback on the injury report, like this and a game on Thursday, and a division game on Thursday, not for the Bengals chasing us, but for you trying to stay above water and make sure you're an above 500 team when this whole thing ends 2 weeks from now.
Sure. And I mean, you have to be mindful of that. I think that's why we saw Lamar Jackson sit on Wednesday. John Harbaugh called it a rest day. Lamar's listed with back and knee issues. The early indication is that I'm not overly concerned here, but get back to me in a couple of days. Get back to me over the weekend when we're talking about, where he is in terms of the injury report. I mean, Harbaugh said a rest day. Okay. I mean, it wasn't just listed as non-injury rest on the injury report. So we get into semantics a little bit, but it's something to keep in the back of your mind, especially because you do have the quick turnaround and you do have five or two games in 5 days. So, but that said, I mean, the Ravens they cannot get caught looking ahead here. I mean, this Denver team is playing pretty solid football. And like I said, their defense is good. So that doesn't mean they're going to stop the Ravens. Let's be clear. I don't think any defense stops the Ravens, but are they capable of slowing the Ravens down offensively a little bit? Yeah, I absolutely think that, especially with their ability to pressure the pocket and get heat on quarterbacks. So I think this is the kind of game that, on the heels of losing in Cleveland and laying the egg and playing as poorly as they did defensively, I would certainly hope they come out ready to play in this one and there's no sleepwalking or lull or anything like that. But again, you got to go do it, right? I mean, you can keep talking about Roquan Smith. Love Roquan, right? He was asked on Wednesday about some of the defensive struggles, and he starts getting into, look, we're going to be fine. We're keeping receipts of what everyone's saying. And it's like, okay, that's well and good. You need to go out and do it then, right? I mean, no more talking about it. You need to go out and do it. Your pass defense is last in the NFL right now. Last. You let the Cleveland Browns hang 29 points on you when they hadn't even scored 20 all year. So this is not a place for, pride and complacency on the defensive side of the ball. Right now, there's urgency to get this thing fixed, or there should be, and they've got to figure it out. So, again, this isn't a Denver offense that wants to chuck it all over the field by any stretch of the imagination. But that said, they do have Courtland Sutton. They do have a tight end in Adam Trautman, who I think is a solid. They've got some other receivers who, if you don't cover them, can probably make plays. I mean, we've seen no-name receivers make plays against the Ravens this year, right? So it's not even so much that. So the good news is Marlon Humphrey is back on the practice field. That Nate Wiggins was back on the practice field, albeit on a limited basis on Wednesday. So again, we'll monitor that as we get closer and closer to Sunday. Friday, we'll have the final injury report. If there's notable elements to that, we'll send that out to you via the WNST text service. But they've got to get right, but because to your point, you've got Cincinnati on the back end of that 5-day stretch. And look, the Bengals at this point, you see what their record is, right? I mean, they've got to do unbelievable work over the second half of the season, regardless of looking at their schedule and saying, hey, well, that looks pretty reasonable. Or they've got to go out and win games. They've got to win a lot of games. And for them, that's going to start with. Not start because, obviously they play another game between now and then, but their urgency is going to be at an all-time high. I mean, it's going to truly be a must-win game in week 10 for them. And we know what they did against this Ravens defense in Cincinnati several weeks back. So for the Ravens, you've got to strike the proper balance here of keeping yourself in good position physically for that one and hoping and praying that you get through Sunday's game okay in that regard. But you better not take this game for granted on Sunday. I mean, nothing should be taken for granted at
Well, it's
this
a
point.
crucial
I mean,
week,
there's,
and it feels to
yeah.
me like it can be slipping a little bit when quarterbacks are on injury reports and quick games, and you're rushing guys back. You mentioned Jones. Hey, look, Humphrey, Wiggins will be back out there this week. Let's see how they do on the backside of that. This Cincinnati game, I mean, I don't use the trap game thing or whatever, but I don't like playing football. You hate Thursday night football. I haven't watched it all year because you told me not to, so I've stopped. Good for you. I don't need to be on the Amazon site. They didn't even endorse the right political candidate last week at the Washington Post. So I didn't cancel my subscription because I didn't have one. But the Thursday night football, this is really where it feels treacherous to me going into this Sunday's game. Not just that you and I wake up Monday morning early with sand in our eyes, and there are going to be players waking up, not ready to play on Thursday. Same thing for Cincinnati side of things. I mean, I'll hear that, but this is just where it really taxes the organization at a time when they haven't had a bye. Players are starting to go by the wayside. It was all 2 weeks ago that you and I were zippity-doo-dah, and they're 5 in a row, and they're really healthy for where they are. It's changed a little bit, and I don't think they're going to get healthier on Sunday against Denver. You just hope to sort of survive this part of the season. And I think if they come out of it 6-4, I'm not shocked. They better may not be 5-5. And if they're 7-3, they've done that Harbaughian job of getting up off the mat from Cleveland, and DeCosta will make some trade next week. I mean, all that is sitting there for this franchise that's pulled it off before. But this is, they got to pull their pants up in the next 6, 7, 8 days, really run harder than they ran last week against Cleveland.
Yeah, but it starts Sunday, right? I mean, you can obviously they're doing their advanced scouting and they've got people that are looking at the Bengals, and it helps. Whenever you're talking about a Thursday game, it always helps when it's a division opponent. I mean, and same thing goes for the Bengals playing the Ravens, right? Again, this Denver team is confident. They're playing confident football right now. I mean, they've won 5 out of 6. Their offense is getting better. Bo Nix is getting better. He can run. He can get out of the pocket. They haven't been able to pressure quarterback. So go look at his splits. And I saw this, I think it was Pro Football Focus, but also a couple other sites. Go look at Bo Nix's passing splits when he's got a clean pocket compared to pressure. He's been really good when they've given him time, and that offensive line's playing well. When he gets pressured, he's terrible and looks like a rookie. Well, the Ravens haven't been getting consistent pressure on
Well, and they're
quarterbacks
not good at
this
that,
way.
right? You know,
Yeah,
this is,
so
well, this
that's
is
what I'm
where you
saying. I
dial
mean,
up safety blitzes and you dial things up that he hasn't seen before, but that's where the confusion, they're already
yeah,
confused, right? They've already had problems.
right.
And if he avoids a blitz because he's crafty enough to get out of the pocket, that's when you give up a home run for trying to hit a home run, right?
Yeah, and that's right. The formula in the past would be to confuse, 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 deceive pre-snap, simulated pressures, blitz, look like you're going to blitz and drop into coverage, all those things. The Ravens try to do those things, and that hasn't changed. In fact, because I've been asked this question, and look, I'm not Mike McDonald, right? I'm not Marvin Lewis. I'm not Rex Ryan. But I've had people ask me, what's changed about the Ravens defense beyond what we, the obvious of coaching changes, some of the personnel that left via free agency. But if you look at the percentages of what they try to do in terms of the percent of their blitz, in terms of their pre-snap deception and all those different things, percentage-wise, it looks very similar to last year, Nestor. It's not as though they blitzed a bunch last year and now they're not blitzing, or they didn't blitz last year and they're blitzing a ton this year.
Or what you
It's not
saw with
as
Wink
though
Martindale
they're.
was way different than what we saw from McDonald. Like there were
Yeah,
definitely two
exactly.
different, it was a different look.
Right. It hasn't been something that's been dramatic in that way. They just haven't executed well, and it's been guys have looked confused or they're not in the right spot. And that's where I said, how much of this is game day? How much of this is going on? What's in the meeting rooms? How much of this is on the practice field? How much of this is, I will also throw this out there, and I'm less inclined to do this now than I was 3, 4 weeks ago. We've talked about it though. They faced the first half of the season, they faced a tougher stretch of quarterbacks, but you can't say that about Jameis Winston. You can't say that about Gardner Minshew, right? I mean, when you have guys like that are doing the things that they've done against them, then that argument holds no weight. But I will say this much, and maybe this is why we've seen and even the Ravens make the move for Deontay Johnson this week. Defensive performance is noisy year to year, and as great as the Ravens were last year, when you do throw in the coaching changes, and not just McDonald, they lost Denard Wilson, who was a very talented secondary coach. And I think that's a factor. Not saying it's all Chris Hewitt's fault, for example, or Doug Mallory, who they brought in, but Denard Wilson really had those guys sharp on their P's and Q's as far as their pre-snap and understanding their assignments and all of that last year. I mean, you looked at it and you saw how well all those guys played. You just change up those variables and then you realize defensive performance is a little less reliable year to year. But that still doesn't explain the Ravens having nearly given up as many touchdown passes this year than they did all of last year already. I mean, we're 8 games into the season and they're at that point. So, I mean, it's crazy to think about it in those terms as far as just how much this group has struggled. I mean, that can't happen. That's inexcusable. That's below the bar, as John Harbaugh said years and years ago, about I think it was a poor Ravens secondary performance in San Francisco, if I recall, was back in 2015. But I mean, it's really messy. I mean, they've got to figure this out. They don't need this defense to be the 2000 defense. They don't even need it to be last year's defense. When your offense is as explosive and efficient and diverse as this group has been, and now you add Deontay Johnson to the mix, just be average. Just get your pass defense back to being average. And if they do that, then this team's absolutely poised to go win a Super Bowl. But they've got a lot of work to get this group back to that point. And I think where there's some concern, and obviously Marcus Williams is the smoking gun example of this right now, is when you have a group that's struggling as much as that group is struggling, and they're so used to being successful. I mean, not just last year. I mean, the history of the franchise, the Ravens culture, as much as Lamar Jackson is changing that over the last 6 years, the Ravens, one word that describes them, defense, over the last 25 years. We all know that. So when you have a defense that is performing like this one is, or should really say not performing as this one isn't performing right now, then it's kind of inevitable to start looking around. And not saying that it creates a fractured locker room necessarily, but you do have everyone kind of looking over their shoulder, like what's going on here? Why aren't you playing better? Or why aren't we getting this figured out coaching wise, or whatever? So I'm not saying that's happening. Let's be very clear about that. But the longer these struggles go on to this magnitude, those things start to become more and more of a concern in terms of guys looking around and pointing the finger and saying, why aren't you doing your job? What's going on here? Why is this so disorganized? Why aren't we making the adjustments schematically here? Why is this guy playing over this guy or vice versa? So, I mean, you always have to watch those things. And look, to their credit, because John Harbaugh has cultivated this kind of a culture in their locker room for a very long time, you have less of a concern about that. But that only goes so far if you continue to struggle to this degree. I mean, go look at their defensive numbers. I mean, that's really, really un-Raven-like. I mean, even years where we've looked at the defense and said, yeah, it's kind of down compared to what it normally is. This is really stark in terms of how different and how much worse it's been than last year. So,
And it shouldn't be this imbalanced, right? Like
it's
we talk about the trading deadline,
no.
and this is not a young defense. This is not a poor defense. They've got Pro Bowl caliber
No.
players along four levels. They got guys making $15, $20 million at every level of the defense. Guy and Hamilton's not even one of them. And they have a special, you call them generational. So there you have it, kind of player in Hamilton, and it's not getting done. And maybe it is as easy as communication in the pass rush. Maybe they do have the players and aren't utilizing them the right way. Maybe if Mike McDonald was back here, it would look differently. And that would really be an indictment on Marlon Humphrey. And it might be an indictment on the whole organization to ever let him get away if Harbaugh's not going to be coaching here 2 years from now or 3 years from now anyway. But whatever it is, it's not for lack of personnel trying. And to your point, we spent an hour talking about the cost of maybe going and getting a pass rusher this week to add to it. They'll continue to try to do that, but it shouldn't be 32nd. I mean, in all of
No.
Harbaugh's years, I don't remember you and I, and you've been here from the beginning, I don't remember you and I ever having a conversation about them being the worst of anything.
I mean, if you look
Well,
at it
PR
right now,
department, but other than that, yes.
if you look at it right now, I mean, this is tracking to be the worst defense the Ravens have had since 96 in terms of points allowed. And obviously, more goes into that than just the defense, special teams, turnovers, all those different things, right? But still, that's where we're talking here. But 32nd in pass defense, 26th in points per game allowed, 29th on third down, 19th in the red zone. Okay, they're number one in rush defense.
And we're
Great.
halfway through the season. That's not a week. That's not a small sample size.
Yeah, exactly. So it's got to get better. Again, I don't need it to be, it doesn't need to be top five. It really doesn't. That's how great their offense is. They don't need a top five defense, they don't need a top 10 defense. They need to get that pass defense at least back into the average range. If they can do that, then I feel fine about this team, and their chances in January. But I mean, we saw it on Sunday. The Raven, it's not as though the Ravens offense was awful on Sunday. It was down from where it had been in previous weeks, no question. But they still scored 24 points, even on a down day. But if you're going to give up that to Jameis Winston, I mean, what's going to happen against, the next time you face Patrick Mahomes, assuming they've got their offense clicking at a higher level than it's been, because that's what Kansas City
Well, the
does.
craziest thing is they played well against Buffalo.
Yeah, they right, exactly, and that's
And
what's so
still
frustrating about
32nd. And
this.
still 32nd. That's
And
crazy.
look, and we always, we can always look at this and say, well, if team team A beats team B, team B beats team C, team A should beat team C. And we know that it never makes sense like that because it's the NFL and it's week to week. If they played Buffalo again this week, I'm guessing the Ravens wouldn't blow them out again. They might win and they might do a good job again. Maybe they're just a good fit against Buffalo. But the point is, you just said it. That's what's so frustrating about this, because even with losing Mike McDonald and some of these defensive assistants, and acknowledging, yeah, you would have liked to keep Geno Stone in a perfect world as your third safety. And yeah, ideally, I wasn't going to pay Patrick Queen what he got in Pittsburgh, but it doesn't mean you don't miss him. It doesn't mean you didn't like the player, right? Liking the player and making the what you feel is the right business decision are two different things. Up front, Jadeveon Clowney, I wouldn't have been inclined to give him a 2-year deal either, but they've missed him. And that's not even to say that Clowney's been all that good in Carolina, because he hasn't been. But the version of Jadeveon Clowney they had last year, boy, they missed that. Because as great as Van Noy started off, and same for Odafe Oweh, look at their pressure rate the last 4 weeks compared to the first four. And I don't think that means that they're, I'm not saying they're bad players or anything like that. Far from it. But I think they're having to play too much because they don't have enough guys behind them that they really trust. Ngakwe right now is kind of their number three right there. I'd feel way better about him as my number four and my number five in that rotation at this point in time. David Ajabo was a healthy scratch on Sunday. Tavius Robinson, I think, is good for what he is, but he's more of a, tweener run stopping. I mean, they even slid him inside a little bit because they were so banged up on the defensive line on Sunday. Point is, you look at that pass rush group, they need another dude. I'm not saying it has to be Max Crosby, because I don't think Vegas is going to trade him, but I really feel like they need another dude if they can go out and get that. But even with all of that, even with all of that acknowledged, it shouldn't be this bad. It just shouldn't. And for it to be this bad now, to your point, halfway through, we're going to be at the halfway point of the season at halftime on Sunday, right? 8 games in, 17-game season. For them to be where they are pass defense wise, I mean, it's alarming, because again, it's not that different. It's not as though, this isn't not like they're speaking a totally different language defensively. It's a
Well,
new
you can't
coordinator, yes,
say to me
but
you're going to win the Super Bowl when you're the 32nd ranked defense in the league, and
off.
you are getting worse, not better at this point. At this point, this time
Right.
last week, they were number one in the power rankings, and Lamar, and King Henry, and they're both going to the Hall of Fame and all of that. And then you take it on the chin to the Browns, and your quarterback shows up on the injury report, and you get 2 games in 4 days. In the middle of the year, when things are sort of teetering a little bit, and the Steelers look capable, I didn't see that coming. I don't think anybody. We never see Washington coming as being capable, but there have been some surprises around the league. You need to make sure you're not the surprise on Sunday, getting beaten at home by the Denver Broncos, who have played really well on the road and as a 9.5 point favorite. Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. He's going to be out in Owings Mills. All are brought to you by Jiffy Lube MultiCare. We are on downtime this week for the Crab Cake Tour. I thought I might be attending World Series games this week. I abstained, but I still celebrated the fact that the Yankees have squandered another World Series. Luke, any other parting shots on this? You'll get your predictions out, and all your observations will be out of Baltimore Positive before the game. And this is going to be a quick turnaround getting into Cincinnati next week as well, not to mention the election, and I want everybody to vote next week. Please vote. Do what I'm doing on Tuesday.
I think I covered most of what I had to say. And again, I'll have some more tidbits and factoids and different things like that as I do my 12 Ravens thoughts and prediction for Sunday's game. I've already said to you, I expect the Ravens to win this game. They better win this game, especially on the heels of what happened in Cleveland and having Cincinnati coming into town 4 days later. But I'll throw something else out there. And this is a good news thing, because we were just talking about a lot of negativity. And they're 5-3. They just had a 5-game winning streak. All is not lost. I'll throw this out there as a positive. Keaton Mitchell was a full practice participant on Wednesday. Doesn't mean he's going to play Sunday. Let's be clear. I mean, this is a guy who just started practicing last week, but I've gotten the sense that they like what they've seen from him physically, and that his speed and all that. So as much as we're talking about Diontae Johnson and talked about Derrick Henry maybe running for 2,000 yards and Lamar, MVP favorite early on through 8 games, you add Keaton Mitchell back to that equation, another guy on the perimeter, another outside speed guy. Man, and let's be clear. Derrick Henry's still going to carry the load, and Keaton Mitchell is, what, close to not even 11 months removed yet from his ACL injury. So let's
Well, and
keep that in
Justice Hill is
mind.
still, very
And
capable
just
too.
right. But the point is, you add another potential home run hitter into this offense. I mean, that's where I joked. I said it about Diontae Johnson. If you get even a Keaton Mitchell that's 85% of what he was last year and throw him into the mix as another change of pace, maybe it won't matter that they have the 32nd ranked pass defense, because I don't know if you'll be able to stop them at that point. So I wanted to at least throw that out there. I don't know if that means he's going to play Sunday. It's kind of a weird time right now, Sunday and then a game Thursday after that. But Keaton Mitchell being a full practice participant, he shed the knee brace this week in practice. So just throw that out there. I wanted to be, we're Baltimore positive. This is still a 5-3 football team. This offense is unbelievable. Lamar is still playing at a MVP level, even if he's a little banged up this week. So yeah, they've got their defensive issues, and I am concerned about that. I'm not going to be disingenuous about that. But Keaton Mitchell, you throw him back into the mix too. And as I've said, if nothing else, I don't want Derrick Henry to have too much of a workload to the point where you want to keep him as fresh as can be in January, because that's all that matters for this team at this point. So you throw Keaton Mitchell into that mix a little bit, and hey, maybe it's only 4 or 5 carries a game or something like that. When he, is fully back to in-game shape and all that. But I thought it was nice to see that. I know that kid's worked really hard. I know you have an affinity for Anthony Mitchell, and we all talked about how great this story was last year. So glad to see him back on the field. Glad to hear that he's doing so well. Sounds like his speed, at least straight line, looks like what it was last year. Lateral movement, we'll see. That's something that's always a challenge for skill players coming back from an ACL. But I wanted to throw that out there amidst all the concerns and negativity and some of the injuries that they have dealt with here recently. Keaton Mitchell looking good and making progress as he's working his way back to an in-game return that, not saying it's imminent, not saying it will happen Sunday, but feels like it's not too far away at this point in time.
If you're not on the WNST text service, you get on it. You'll get all the breaking news first. If anything happens with Lamar, if there's any trades, anything weird's going on, we're at the end of the baseball season now. So if the Orioles are going to do anything, if there's news to be made, they can make it because they have that sort of moratorium on any sort of news during the World Series. So that baseball part's over. And the Yankees still lost. The Yankees still lost. The Yankees still lost. They're not the champions. The Yankees lose. The Yankees lose. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour throughout November and into December. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven scratch-offs to give away. I'm going to get some holiday scratch-offs as well because they are now out. They don't have the sniffers this year. John Martin hates when I call them sniffers. The scented, no scented lottery tickets this year. So there goes all the fun. Wah, wah, all the fun. My bag smelled like gingerbread till like March last year. So it was good. We're going to be at Coco's. We're going to be at Fadley's. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Gertrude's. We're moving the show around a whole bunch. Hope to bring it back out to Carroll County as well later on this month. So we'll have some more words on that. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare putting us out on the road. I'm wearing my Curio Wellness shirt along with Farr & Daughter. They provide health and wellness needs in the cannabis space. We provide education here for that. And Wendy Bronfine joined us this week, gave us a Duran Duran review from Monday night as well. It is our 26th anniversary, and our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions keep our water clean. 1-800 Clean Water. They give me bottles of water, and they're really tasty, fresh water, but they keep the water in my house clean with a water filtration system that takes care of things that well water, no bueno. You don't be drinking the well water. Call Liberty Pure, 1-800 Clean Water. Also, for all your plumbing needs, they are there for that. Wise Markets calls these wise conversations. We have plenty of them ahead, including a whole bunch of stuff coming from Denver. Brandon Stokely joined us this week. Mike Klisch joined us this week, as well as Sean Drotar, all insiders with the Broncos. Lots of stuff on Bo Nix, Sean Payton, Peyton Manning, Peyton Manning, and more. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.